as we are going through these chapters of the Gita, we must recall how the Bhagavad Gita 18 chapters are divided. Basically, the chapters are divided into three sections of six chapters. Chapters 1 to 6, 7 to 12, and 13 to 18. How are they divided? This 18 or these three sections of the Gita are in relation to the great Vedic saying, which is Tat Tvam Asi. Right? We have heard about this many times. What is Tat? What does Tat refer to? Huh? That is who? God. That is that, meaning referring to God, the Supreme Being. Tvam is us, you and me. That is Tvam, that is you. And what is Asi? Okay, you can say if. So that God is you. That's what the words are saying. That is you. You are one and the same. There is no difference. So in the same way, the 18 chapters are also divided into three sections. The first six sections, the first section, six chapters, is dealing with one. That is you and me. What is our duty? What is our spiritual action that we should do? And therefore, the first six chapters concentrate on the karma yoga sadhana. The emphasis is on selfless action. Karma yoga sadhana. And such a person who follows the path of selfless action, the technical term given to such a person is called a yogi. Therefore, a yogi is not one who wears orange clothes, but anyone who follows the path of selfless action. Which means you can be a householder also and follow the path of selfless action. And the middle six chapters are dedicated to Tat, or that divine consciousness. And what is the sadhana that we should do to worship this divine consciousness? So the middle six chapters concentrate on what is called as Upasana. Upasana means actually worship. The word Asana means to sit. Up means near. Sit near meaning not physically sit near, but bring your mind nearer to that deity, that God whom you worship by offering flowers, by offering fruit, offering your prayers. And the final six chapters, if there is Tvam here, there is Tat here, the final six chapters are Asi. Asi means how do you unite the Tvam with the Tat. So how do I merge this inner soul with that supreme soul? And in order to do that, what is the sadhana we need to follow? Jnana Yoga. So there is emphasis on Jnana Yoga, or path of knowledge. And when one attains this knowledge, earlier one is called a yogi, now one is called a jnani. So from a yogi you become a jnani. Now, why I say this? Because if you notice, as we are going through the first six chapters, since the emphasis on karma yoga, few important points are constantly repeated in these six chapters. You will find even chapter 5 is basically a repetition of what we have gone through in chapter 2, 3 and 4. Why is there repetition? Why does Krishna keep on repeating the same point again and again and again? Exactly. The only way to make you remember is to reinforce that same concept again and again and again. So the emphasis you will find is in the first six chapters is Karma Yoga. And two important things we need to notice from the first six chapters. The first important thing is about Karma Yoga, where Krishna explained what is the purpose of Karma Yoga. What was the purpose of Karma Yoga? Okay, first of all, what is the definition of Karma Yoga? Simple definition, which I gave you last week. That's why we need reinforcement. Right action
without anticipating the fruits of the
plus right attitude. Right action with right attitude. That is the simplest definition of Karma Yoga. Therefore, not only should we be doing the right action, but our attitude also must be pure. There must be no ego, jealousy, pride, anger, etc. involved in our action. When these two are combined together, it becomes Karma Yoga, selfless action. Therefore, the definition of Karma Yoga is right action and right attitude. And what is the purpose of performing this Karma Yoga? Purification of mind. So, with this, there is purification of mind. Then, what is the use of purifying the mind? To attain, to prepare your mind to absorb knowledge. And what type of knowledge you are talking about here? Spiritual knowledge means what? Knowledge of what? Atma. It is about Atma Gyan. Knowledge is only of one type, and that is about the soul or the consciousness. Okay? Now, therefore, what we have concluded from these few chapters is that everyone has got to go through a path of Karma Yoga leading to Jnana Yoga. You cannot avoid this. Because if you jump straight to Jnana Yoga without purification, you will not attain that knowledge very easily. It becomes a struggle. So the important thing that Krishna stressed to Arjuna is, first perform Karma Yoga, purify the mind, prepare the mind for knowledge. You cannot skip. You have to go through progressively. That is the first point. The second point which he is emphasizing now in chapter 5 is that this is a policy which all of us have, that as long as we remain a householder, we have so many responsibilities, duties to do. How are we ever going to attain knowledge? Because for knowledge we need time, we need quietude, we need the right environment to absorb this knowledge. Can we attain this knowledge by being a householder? And if you don't attain this knowledge, you cannot attain moksha. Moksha is impossible to attain without knowledge. Therefore, we feel that we are at a disadvantage. And hence, the scriptures also present to us that we have to go through a particular lifestyle. That is, the scriptures say you should start with Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means you start with the student life, and then from there you progress to Grihas, where you set up your own family, you get married and you start a family. And then as your children grow up and they set up their own household and the husband and wife are left together, then you enter the third stage, which is called Vanaprastha. which is generally called as the retired age, and then finally you give up everything, even the husband and wife separate and take up sannyas. And thus this is called a total renunciation. Thus from an active life you go down to a, you progress to a passive life, right? Where you devote more time to knowledge and less action. You have given up all your duties, your responsibilities. You have ample time to concentrate on the knowledge. So it would seem to us that eventually we have to renounce everything, give up everything if we are to attain the knowledge. But what Krishna is presenting here is another way for us also to attain moksha, which is finish brahmacharya, student life, proceed to grihas, family life, and in this family life you go through karma yoga, you go through jnana yoga and attain moksha. You do not have to renounce everything. That is what Krishna is presenting here. That is one option for you, that you can remain as a householder provided you have the right attitude and quality. You can also attain moksha. You don't have to renounce everything. But if you also want, there is also a third option whereby from brahmacharya, what do? Go straight to sannyas. You don't get married, don't set up family, don't start a business. Go straight to an ashram, renounce everything and lead a life of as a renunciate. But even if you do that, what can you not avoid? Huh? No. What must you also go through if you jump from student life to sannyas? You still have to do karma yoga and you then have to go to jnana yoga and then get moksha. So whichever way you look at it, between karma and jnana there is no choice. But between lifestyle, is there a choice? Yes, there is a choice. So that's why these six chapters heavily emphasize on karma yoga, and then how from karma yoga we must move to jnana yoga while we also remain in the household life. It is possible also. Okay. So we have completed first three verses of chapter 5, which itself is called karma sannyasa yoga, renunciation. Karma is action, sannyasa is renunciation of action. But what do we mean by renunciation of action? Can anybody really renounce action? Can you give up all your action? Is it possible? Is it possible to give up all your duties, responsibilities, give up all your actions? Why not? You still have to eat. You still have to work. Even if you go to ashram, can you give up all your actions? You still have to maintain the ashram, look after the ashram. People have to volunteer to do all sorts of duties in the ashram. So ultimately, nobody can give up action. Therefore, what does renunciation of action mean? Not? So what is through renunciation of action? If physical action cannot be given up, then what are you renouncing? Which is what? What do you mean by renouncing fruits of the action? When you do your duty, you also get results. Isn't it? So the renunciation is not physical, the renunciation is internal. You cannot externally renounce anything. Whatever work you do, you look after your family, whatever you do, even in the ashram, you will get the results. So physically you can never give up, you can never renounce. So when we say renunciation of action, it is not physical renunciation, it is mental. It is an internal renunciation. And therefore we internally renounce by surrendering everything to Lord. When we surrender the results of our actions mentally to God, the most beautiful thing is there is no ego, there is no pride, there is no envy, there is no jealousy, because all my work is done for one goal in mind, one purpose in mind, that is for God. This body is an instrument through which God is functioning. So there is no question of ego. And that attitude can be maintained as a householder. If you are cooking a beautiful dish, a wonderful dish for your family, and your family praises you and said, what a marvelous dish you cook, what do you say? What do you feel inside? Very elated. And next week there's too much salt in the food, and the family complain, what a lousy dish you cook, there's so much of salt, what happens? It will deflate. But if you consider every action I'm doing as an instrument of God, then there is no question of being elated or deflated. Everything is surrendered unto God. Right? So we can apply that concept. And what did Krishna say, therefore, in verse number 3 that we covered last week, the true definition of sannyas, renunciation, is what? He says, neya san nitya sannyasi. Neya means know that what is a nitya sannyasi? A true sannyasi, or nitya means a perpetual sannyasi, a eternal sannyasi, is not one who is identified by his clothes that he wears, but yo na dveshti na kamshati, the one who neither has likes or hates. Dveshti means hate, kamshati means likes. The one who has overcome the likes and dislikes. Now, what do we mean by likes and dislikes? Because this is something that affects all our actions throughout the day. We perform variety of actions based on what I like and what I dislike. What is the danger of having so many dislikes? What is the danger of having so many dislikes? You don't get attached. Dislikes lead to what? When dislikes, more and more dislikes you have, harbor, lead to? Lead to hate, isn't it? Extreme dislikes can, if out of control, lead to hate. And if still not controlled, hate leads to
anger.
Exactly. So the more and more dislikes you cultivate, the potentiality of hate is there. The more and more hate you cultivate, the potentiality of anger is there. And what about likes? The more and more likes you cultivate?
Attachment
leads to attachment. Meaning that you cannot live without that object, you cannot live without that person. That is what we call likes leading to attachment. And what is the ultimate problem of having so many likes and dislikes? The more likes and dislikes you cultivate, what is the ultimate problem? Mind is never at. Isn't it? The more and more likes you entertain, likes and dislikes you entertain, the mind is never at peace. Right? So that's why Krishna says, a true sannyasi, whether you are in the ashram or whether you are in the house, a true sannyasi is one who has subdued likes and dislikes, who is content with everything. And you know what is the biggest problem? Why you are never content? One of the main reasons why we are never content. What leads to discontentment? What is the greatest problem? What leads to discontentment?
Because you don't get what you get. I mean, you don't get what you want. And you're looking at the wrong place.
And you don't get what you want.
Greed.
Greed. What causes discontentment? Biggest problem is we like to always compare, isn't it? Comparison is our biggest problem. What my neighbor has, what my relative has, what my friend has, I always want something that they have or something better. So comparison is the one of the biggest dangers. That's why the sages say, be content. Whatever you earn, be content with what you have. Do not look at what others have. Be content. So one quality is yo na dveshti na kaankshati. One who has subdued likes and hates. And what is the second quality if you want to be called a sannyasi? Which is, sannyasi here is a state of the mind here. That is what Krishna is describing. The second quality is found in verse 3 also, nirdvando. Nirdvando means understanding that life is nothing but a pair of opposites. Last week, did we discuss what is the definition of the world? I can't remember whether I did it here or another class. Right? What is the definition of the world? Anityam and Asukham. Anityam means it is not real. Not real means what? What do you mean when you say it is not real? Nityam is real, Anityam is not real. Why does the scripture say the world is not real? Constantly changing. What was the truth yesterday? What you saw yesterday, today might not be there. What is there today, tomorrow might not be there. It is constantly changing. And the second quality of the world is asukham. Sukham is happiness, asukham is sorrow. The world is nothing but a place of sorrow. But then you say, how can you say that? The world is not a place of sorrow. It does give you some happiness. But what type of happiness? Temporary, changing happiness. So knowing this, that the world is what we call dvandva. Dvandva means it is a pair of opposites. There is victory, there is failure. There is happiness, there is sorrow. There is health, there is disease. If we only expect the world to give us happiness, then whose policy is it? If we say the world must only give me happiness, must only give me peace of mind, everybody must do according to what I say, then whose mistake is that? It's our own mistake, isn't it? We are looking at the world, analyzing the world in the wrong way. So if a sannyasi, a person, a realized person understands that the world is nothing but a pair of opposites, it has the capacity to give me happiness, it also has the capacity to give me sorrow, then what happens? I am prepared, I am mentally prepared, I am able to accept both happiness and sorrow. Because if I only want happiness from the world, then I cannot handle that sorrow. But if I understand the nature of the world is like that, a person today can be your best friend, tomorrow can be your worst enemy. We should understand the nature of people. We should understand the nature of objects. They are constantly subject to change. Therefore, I am mentally prepared to accept anything from the world. Nirdvando means such a mental preparation a person has. This person does not depend on the world for happiness, but depends on who? Before you depend on yourself, you depend on? God. So you move from world dependence to God dependence, and then from God, how do you move from world dependence to God dependence? Through bhakti, through devotion, through prayers, right? You move from world dependence, you don't depend on the world for your happiness, you move to God dependence. And then how do you move from God dependence to self dependence? Knowledge. That's when you understand Tat Tvam Asi, that I am. That fountain of happiness is within me. So move from world dependence to God dependence, from God dependence to self dependence. So that's why Krishna says here, these two qualities are very important. If you cultivate them, what is the result? Sukham Mandat Pramuchyate. Sukham means very easily. Sukham Pramuchyate. Pramuchyate means what you call, you are free. And the word pra is used there, meaning you are totally free. So it is not only muchyate. Muchyate means free. Pramuchyate means you are absolutely free from what? Bandhat, from bondage. Bondage of what? bondage that this world has the capacity to disturb your peace of mind. Because your peace of mind is no more dependent on the world. So the world has no more capacity to disturb your peace of mind. You are freed from that bondage. Okay, up to that we have covered up to verse 3. Now let us look at verse number 4. Now, in verse number 4 here, Krishna speaks about a balaha. The word balaha, actually, in verse number 4, chapter 5, the word balaha directly translated means child. But here when the scriptures talk about child, they are not talking about in terms of physical, but in terms of mental capacity to understand. So balaha here means one who is immature, one who is devoid of knowledge, one who is ignorant. What do these ignorant people say? Krishna says, balaha pravadanti. Pravadanti means they say or they speak of what? Now, look at the first line of verse 4. What do these immature people say? Their view of life is that Samkhya Yoga. Again, what is Samkhya? There are two words here. One is Samkhya, one is Yoga. Samkhya is just a technical term that means ashram sannyasa. It means one who has given up everything and dedicated their life, has renounced everything and dedicated their life to pursuit of knowledge. So a contemplative person who has renounced all actions, all duties and taken up life in an ashram. That is called Samkhya. It is just a different technical term, that's all. And what is Yoga? In this case, what is yoga? Yoga has a lot of meanings, but in this case, if Samkhya is a life of renunciation, what is yoga?
Action.
It's a life of activity, which means life of a householder. So what Krishna is saying here, those immature people, those ignorant people, look at these two type of lifestyles. One is one who has renounced all actions, renounced all duties, taken up a life in an ashram, that is Samkhya. And another type of person who remains in the household, he leads an active life, does all his duties and responsibilities. What do these ignorant people say? They say, prathak. Prathak means these two lifestyles are totally different. The goals of these two lifestyles are totally different. They are very distinct. They are very separate. Which means what? Which means that the goal of a householder and the goal of a sannyasi are totally different. But Krishna is saying what? These people are balaha. They are ignorant. They are not
They are not mature.
They are not mature. They are not looking at the nature or what is the goal. So he says here, and you see such people also, we also sometimes get confused because sometimes we are told about the lifestyles of all the great souls who achieve moksha. And what are all these people? They are mostly people who have given up family life. Example, Lord Buddha. What he did? Got married, had a child, but gave up everything. Went off to the forest, did meditation and gained moksha. So, and then not only Lord Buddha, we have examples of Swami Vivekananda, right? Came from family life, he had father, mother, sisters, etc. Met Ramakrishna Paramahansa, then decided to renounce everything and took to life of sannyas. So, they point out to people like this and then what they say to us, don't get entangled in family life. Don't get entangled in household life. You better learn to give up everything, renounce everything and take up sannyas. Then only you can get moksha. But Krishna says such thinking is very narrow-minded, is very immature thinking. Why? If you recall in chapter 3, he gave us the example of who?
Janaka.
Janaka, exactly. And what did he say about Janaka? Who was Janaka? Janaka was a king. He had a kingdom. He had wife. He had children. Yet, he had a guru. The guru was called Ashtavakra. Ashtavakra gave him the knowledge, and with that knowledge Janaka attained moksha. He did not renounce everything. He remained totally active throughout his whole life. But he acquired the knowledge and he attained moksha. So that's why Krishna says, such people who look at both these lifestyles as having a different goal, such people are called balaha. They are immature, they are ignorant people. Right? It is the words of ignorant people. And therefore he says, na pandita. Pandita who? They are wise people. Pandita here again, we must remember that the scriptures never talk about physical description of people. When they identify anybody as a yogi, a pandita, it does not mean the clothes you wear, but it reflects the state of your mind. So pandita here means wise people will never say this. They have understood very clearly that both parts lead to the same goal. They lead to the same destination. Householder can reach moksha, a sannyasi in the ashram also can reach moksha. So, if you are fit, what do they say? What do the wise people say? Ekam, there is only one goal. The word ekam appears in line number 3. Ekam, there is only one goal for both. And what you should do, you should be firmly established in that one, whatever you are doing. If you are a householder, then be firmly established as a householder. Do karma yoga in the right way. Gain knowledge and attain moksha. If you have decided to renounce everything, go away to sannyas, to ashram, then also be firmly established. That means you must be dedicated, you must be committed. This is the problem. We fail to reach the goal, not because you are a householder or you are sannyas. You fail to reach the goal, why? Because you don't have commitment, you don't have dedication. You can run off to a sannyas, you can run off to an ashram, but if you don't have the commitment and dedication, you will also never attain moksha. So here that's why Krishna says that ashtita, you must be committed, you must be dedicated to whichever path you choose. You must be well established. So that's why in our tradition, according to our tradition, we have both systems of parampara. We call it parampara means, what is the English translation for parampara?
Lineage,
yeah, okay. There is two types of lineage. We call it parampara means lineage. There's two types of parampara. One is called sannyasi parampara, where you go to ashram, surrender to a guru, do service to the guru, take care of the ashram, attain knowledge. There is also one kind of lineage. There is also another one called grihas parampara, where you remain as a householder, do your duty to your family, to your company, to your community, as karma yoga, selfless action, find a guru, attain knowledge and get moksha. So both systems are there. And we are also told of many saints and sages, of householders who have done this, who have remained as a householder and have attained moksha. Besides Janaka, there are many others who are also mentioned in our scriptures also. So both the, in fact the most famous one will be Sage Vyasa. Sage Vyasa had a son, he imparted his knowledge to his son called Sukracharya. So there is also examples also in our scriptures that not necessary that they have all given up and gone to ashram and attained moksha. So Krishna says, ekam api. Even if you follow anyone, you follow lifestyle of a householder or you follow lifestyle of a sannyasi, follow it with dedication, ashtita, follow it with commitment. And he uses the word samyak. Samyak means properly, efficiently, with dedication, follow that path. What is the result if you follow with dedication, with commitment? He says in the last line, ubayor vindate phalam. Ubayor means of the both. Phalam means goal. What is the goal of sannyasa? Moksha. What is the goal of grihas? Moksha. So ultimately you will get the fruit of both. Whichever path you decide to follow, don't be confused, don't be disturbed. Be committed to your path. Ultimately you will attain that phalam, that fruit which is called moksha. That is a common result for both the lifestyles. So, if we look at this lifestyle, basically we summarize this. The first goal is, whichever lifestyle you choose is to get what? Chitta Shuddhi, purity of mind. In Sanskrit it is called Chitta Shuddhi. Now, if we look at it, can I run this away? You have written this down? Now, if we look at the process, whichever lifestyle we follow, whether you go to an ashram or whether you remain as a householder, the process is same. The first goal is to attain Chitta Shuddhi. Shuddhi means purification, Chitta means mind. So that is purification of mind. Now, purification of mind, you must understand, leads us to what? It leads us to a very important quality which is called Viveka Shakti. What is Viveka Shakti? As the mind gets purified, as we are doing selfless action with that right attitude, all our actions are dedicated to God, mind gets purified, there occurs a second quality in us which is called Viveka Shakti. Viveka means our power to discriminate, our power to understand what is right, what is wrong. What is the right lifestyle for me, what is the wrong lifestyle for me. This Viveka Shakti arises in us. So then we start asking questions. What is my goal in life? Who is God? How do I reach God? All these kind of questions will arise when your mind gets purified. When your mind is filled of desires and anger and greed and all envy and jealousy, how can Viveka Shakti ever arise? So first of all, remove that dirt. Remove, clear that dirt away from your mind. Naturally, this Viveka Shakti will arise. What happens when this Viveka Shakti arises? Then comes another stage, which we call Vairagya. Vairagya simply means detachment. And what do we mean by detachment? When you have this Viveka Shakti, you start analyzing everything properly. What is the world? What are people? Why are people like this? What is my relationship with the world? And thus you find that the world is not a place where I should find my happiness. As I mentioned earlier, you move from world dependence to God dependence. So Vairagya means what? You slowly detach from the world. When I say detach, it does not mean physically, it means what? Mentally. You don't depend on the world for your happiness, for your peace of mind. You look for a different source, that means you look towards spiritual activities. So you find that slowly you are not so interested in cultivating. If you don't have this Vairagya, what do most people do? We need to be connected with people, we need to join clubs, we need to have more friends, we need to go to parties, we need to be in the social circles, right? But when Vairagya comes, you understand that the world cannot give you that happiness. So you start shifting, you start slowly detaching and look for happiness on the spiritual path. That is called Vairagya. Detach, attach. Detach and attach. With Vairagya comes another very important quality that is called Guru Prapti. Guru Prapti means what? Then, when your mind is ready, when your mind is purified, when you understand the nature of the world, all the conditions are very right for you to get the right Guru in your life. Because you must understand, even the best Guru can come and knock at your doorstep, but if your mind is filled of all impurities, are you ready for knowledge? You're not ready. You can have the best Guru at your doorstep, but you are not prepared to receive the knowledge. So you have prepared yourself in the right way, the opportunity, you have enough punyam, you have good punyam, eventually the right Guru will come into your life. And that Guru is who? That one which we have discussed in chapter 4, verse 34, 35. You remember that verse about the Guru? Tat vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinam. Right? We have discussed that about the Guru. Then what happens with Guru Prapti once you have the right Guru? What does the Guru give you?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. So, with Guru Prapti comes jnanam. Because if those people are not interested in knowledge, even the right guru comes, what will they be asking? Again, they will ask for material things. They are not interested in knowledge. They find the guru, they surrender to guru, but they only are interested in more material things. But if you are ready with Viveka Shakti, with Vairagya, it's all there. When the guru comes in your life, all you are interested in how to get that knowledge. And with that knowledge, then only you can attain. So that is the whole cycle that we all go through, and we all start first with Chitta Shuddhi, which is purification of the mind through the process of Karma Yoga. Okay, in verse number 5 now, Krishna carries on discussing about this word again, Sankhya. He uses Sankhya. He says that goal, the sthanam here means moksha, means the goal which is attained by who? Prapyate means attained by Sankhya. Who are the Sankhyas again? The sannyasis, the ashram sannyasis. So Krishna is saying here, yat Sankhya prapyate sthanam, those ashram sannyasis who attain moksha is the same tat yogir api gamyate. Gamyate means is also attained by who? Yogi. Who is the yogis again? Householders. That same goal called moksha, which is attained by sannyasis, is the same goal which will be attained by a householder also, through the same process of karma yoga and jnana yoga. Only we must understand the duties of a sannyasi differ from the duties of a householder, but both have duties. They cannot avoid duties. So he says that goal will be reached by both, either by a householder or by a sannyasi. Now, no doubt we have to understand that it is more challenging as a householder to attain knowledge, because there are many distractions, there are many responsibilities and duties, but here Krishna is saying it is possible. He is giving us a hope that it is possible if you really want it. If you aspire for it, it is possible to remain as a householder and attain moksha. So, he says now, in the third line, if you look at Ekam Samkhyam Cha Yogam Cha. Ekam, that one destination, that one goal which is achieved by a sannyasi is also achieved by a householder. And this very important line, the last line, he says, Yaha Pashyati Sa Pashyati. One who sees, he really sees. So what do you mean by sees? Because Pashyati means to see. So what are you seeing actually? Realize. The one who understands, the one who understands this very clearly, who knows that the goal of a householder and the goal of a sannyasi both is moksha, that person is the one who has understood the role of either a sannyasi or householder. That person is very clear in his mind. He is not confused. There is no confusion. Regarding the efficacy of both paths are one and the same. Right? Now, why is Krishna emphasizing this point? That the one who sees, the one who understands that householder can also reach moksha, sannyasi can also reach moksha. What is Krishna trying to emphasize here? Both lead to the same goal, but what is he actually emphasizing here?
So we don't drop everything and run to the mountain.
Correct. So, who wanted to drop everything and take sannyas? Arjuna, isn't it? It is Arjuna who wrongly thought that this war which I am fighting, this battle which I am fighting is not giving me peace of mind. So to attain peace of mind, Krishna, why don't I just abandon this battlefield, run away, take sannyas, I will definitely get peace of mind. And this is what we think. And actually, thoughts of sannyas only arise in a householder when problems arise in life, isn't it? Family problem, business problem, this problem, then what do you say? Better I take sannyas. You know, that will solve all my problems. But you try to take sannyas, it's not easy if you are not ready for it. If you go to an ashram, give up everything, it's not easy. You will miss your television, you miss your newspaper, you miss your shopping, you miss your handphone, everything. isn't it? Try to live without your handphone for one day. It's impossible. So here he says, one who sees this very clearly, that means telling Arjuna also that you should understand this, that not by running away from your responsibilities and duties and going off to an ashram you are going to attain peace of mind. By staying where you are, correcting your attitude to your action, you can attain that same peace of mind as a sannyasi can. So the problem is not your actions, the problem is your attitude has to be corrected. You don't have to change your action, you don't have to change your lifestyle, change your attitude. Okay, and worst of all is, if you abandon your responsibilities and duties, what's going to happen? If you decide, I'm fed up of family life, fed up of this, I want to take up ashram life, just like what Arjuna wanted to do, what is the biggest problem? Correct. In some way or other, your karma will catch up with you also. If householders are not giving you problem, people in ashram will give you problem. But what is the biggest problem here? You create more papa. By abandoning your duties, by abandoning your responsibilities, you accumulate more papa. So therefore, one should not give up your responsibility or duties. Just understand, correct your attitude and carry on in your family life also. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay? Now, in the last verse, we go on to verse 6 now. In the last verse, Krishna said that the goal that is attained by sannyasi is moksha. The goal that is attained by a householder is also moksha, right? But what did Krishna tell Arjuna in verse 3? He told Arjuna what? You take up karma yoga, remain as a householder. Now obviously the question will be, if both lead to moksha, then why should I go through all the trouble of a householder's life? Why not I just take up a sannyas life? Isn't it? Because he instructed Arjuna, you remain as a householder, don't take up sannyas. But then in verse number 5, he is telling him that sannyas leads to moksha, householder life also leads to moksha. So the question will arise then, why should we then go through this family life, for what purpose? So here Krishna also answers that question. He says here, if you read the English text first, renunciation, meaning the life of a sannyasi, is difficult to obtain without yoga, without karma yoga, without selfless action. So one should not give up actions and jump to a sannyas life. That is very, very important. The reason, in fact, why we have a householder's life, why is it that, what is the necessity of a householder's life? Have you realized that you are born, then you get married, you have spouse, you have children? What is actually the purpose of all this householder's life? Yes, you are burning your past karmas, but what else? That you cannot do anything about.
To prepare us for the next stage. So that we are receptive once we go through all that.
Correct. So if you face all the various varieties of problems in a householder's life and you are able to deal with that and you are able to overcome that, don't you think then your mind is prepared for sannyas? When I'm talking about sannyas, I'm not talking about ashram, but your mind is prepared for higher pursuits in life. So the householder life actually prepares us. We meet all kinds of people who are friendly to us, who are hostile to us. You meet good neighbors, you meet bad neighbors, you have relatives, some who are friendly to you, some are hostile to you. You meet all kinds of people in life. And if you are able to deal with all the situation, then your mind is prepared for a higher pursuit. So family life actually prepares us to go through and understand, and also prepares us to aim for higher goals in life. So we should not get discouraged by the problems that are happening. One is of course due to our karmas that we are going through this. Second is, it is going to prepare us for a higher goal in life. So, family life is actually a preparation for a higher goal. That is what we should understand. And here, that's why Krishna says, that sannyas aptum dukkham. To attain the state of sannyas is difficult if you have not prepared yourself through all the tumbles and the ups and downs of life. Therefore, one should not jump to sannyas unless you have gone through a family life. You have understood and dealt with various situations in your life. Otherwise, to jump to sannyas is a very difficult, what he says, dukkham, it's not a very easy state to reach, right? Because why? In sannyas, you need to have a lot of quietude, you need to have time to study the scriptures, so you need a lot of peace and quiet. But if you are unable to deal with all kinds of situations in life, even if you go away to an ashram, your mind is still troubled by many things. So first learn how to subdue this mind. And as you face the various challenges in life, you will find that every challenge comes in, you are able to overcome it, you are able to keep a steady mind through all difficulties in life. So that's why actually somebody said, how do you define life? What is the definition of life? What is the definition of life? How do you define life? All of us have gone through half our lives already. How do you define life?
Life is the path that you take where you come to realize the happiness within your soul.
Okay, what else? You know how everybody's life can be defined?
You
this is your life.
That's dead already. ECG is dead. Huh? Yeah,
okay, the ECG. Yeah, ECG. This is not ECG. This is how everybody's life is defined, isn't it?
No,
it's
ups and downs.
No.
This is up and down.
No.
This is
not
already out.
This is what we expect.
Yeah.
The life will be smooth sailing.
Yes.
So what does this mean?
Balanced.
Date of birth. Have you got any control over your date of birth?
No.
Have you got any control over your date of death? What have you got control about? That dash that appears in between. That is your life. That is what you have control about. What you do. That's why between dashing between from they say you're dashing between womb to tomb, isn't it? Our whole life we are dashing between birth to death. You cannot control your time of birth, you cannot control your time of death. But what you have total control about is this one little dash. That dash is in your hand, how you control it. So our whole life can be just defined. You know, you see the obituaries, they'll put date of birth, date of death, one dash. What is the whole life about that person's life? Is that one little dash only. Not the date of birth and the date of death. It is that one little dash, that's it. And that is our life basically. That is what we have control about. So here he says that one should not therefore go into sannyas one until you have prepared yourself. Therefore life is a challenge. Life is an opportunity for us to prepare ourselves for a higher goal. As we go through all these ups and downs of life, what we do with that dash is very important. How we take the control of our mind. The whole Bhagavad Gita actually has to do with everything to do with the mind. Once you are a master of your mind, you are a master of your destiny. That is what basically the Bhagavad Gita is about. It is not physical. Everything has to do with your inner equipment. Okay. So having explain to Arjuna about the two different lifestyles that both lead to the same goal. Now, what is the practice that we all have to go through? So, in verse number 7, he summarizes this practice that we all have to go through. I forgot the last part of verse number 6. So here he is telling Arjuna, verse number 6, you are a man of action. Since you are a man of action, you are a family man, remain as you are, go through that family life and purify yourself. So here he tells Arjuna, if you look at verse number 6, go to the Sanskrit verses on page 101. Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma. Look at the third line. Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma. One who is firm on the path of Karma Yoga, what happens to such a person? Krishna says, he becomes a Muni. Now he gives another definition to that person. From a yogi, he becomes a Muni. What is a Muni? M-U-N-I-R. Translation given is a sage. So what does it actually mean? If you are on the path of Karma Yoga, diligently doing all your duties, responsibilities with the right attitude, Krishna says from Yoga Yukto, you become a Muni. Now you are doing all your actions, your duties, your responsibilities as a householder with the right attitude, you have purified yourself. Krishna says you become a Muni. Huh? Higher soul. Remember what I told you earlier? Munir means one who turns inward, who turns contemplative. What happens when your mind is purified? I said, you get Viveka Shakti. Viveka Shakti means there arises all this thirst for knowledge. You become more contemplative in nature. You start thinking about life, about God, etc., about the world. So, Munir means you become a contemplative person. From a yogi, you become more contemplative. You turn inward. You find more time for quietude, for peace. You like to have more time for peace and quietude. You don't enjoy loud places, noisy places. See, sometimes we can also tell whether we, what is the inner nature of our mind. If you are the type of person who enjoys partying, noisy places, you love those kind of activities, that means it tells you your mind is not ready. But if your mind is seeking quietude, you like to sit down and read the scriptures, or you just like to sit down and contemplate, that means it tells you your mind is purified and you're moving to another dimension also. So very important, we can also judge ourselves where we are also. So from Yoga Yuktaha, Krishna says you become a Munir, a contemplative person. That's why Adi Sankaracharya has a beautiful verse in Bhaja Govindam, which goes like this. Yoga Ratva, Boga Ratva, Sangha Ratva, Sangha Vihina, Yasya Brahmani Ramate Chitam, Nandati, Nandati, Nandat Eva. What he says is, sometimes yoga ratva, sometimes you are doing spiritual activities. Yoga ratva means you are engaged in all kinds of spiritual activities, going to temple, singing bhajans, etc., doing prayers, rituals. Sometimes boga ratva, what is boga ratva? You are engaged in the world, doing your duties, responsibilities. Sometimes you can't get away, you have to attend some parties, some relatives invite, you have to go. Boga ratva. So sometimes yoga ratva, sometimes boga ratva. Sangha Ratva, sometimes you are in the company of people, you can't help it, right? Sangha Ratva. Sometimes Sangha Vihina, sometimes you are alone by yourself, you have time for yourself. Okay, he says it is not important whether you are Yoga Ratva, Boga Ratva, Sangha Ratva, Sangha Vihina. What is important? Yasya Brahmani Ramate Chittam. Chittam is mind, Ramate means fixed on. Brahma is fixed on the highest, is fixed on, it's a God conscious mind. Your mind is constantly fixed on God. It doesn't matter where you are, what you are doing. As long as your mind is fixed on God, then he gives in the very last line, three times he repeats, what he says? Nandati, Nandati, Nandat, at peace, ever at peace. A mind is only at peace when it is constantly resting on God. It doesn't matter whether you are in the company of people, whether you are alone by yourself, whether you are doing spiritual things or whether you are engaged in the world. A mind is at rest, at peace, when it is constantly fixed on God. You should read Bhaja Govindam, in fact, very simple, 30 verses, but very profound, written by Adi Sankaracharya. So one who enjoys this quietude, one who enjoys this contemplative mood, such a person is called a Muni. And what happens to this Muni? Krishna says, when from yogi you become a contemplative person, he says, Brahma adhikachati. You attain Brahma, the state of Brahma, meaning you attain moksha. And how long will it take for you to reach that state? Na achirena. It won't be very long. He says here, na achirena gachati. That means once you attain that contemplative stage, from that stage to moksha, the journey is very short. It is a very quick one. Yeah? It is getting there, yeah. So from going from karma yogi to a muni, to a contemplative person, that is the biggest challenge. Once you reach that stage where you become contemplative and go inward in nature, then Krishna says that journey from munir to moksha is a very short journey, is a very quick journey. Okay, that is verse number 6. Now let us look at verse number 7. And actually very few people have attained this stage. So it's not easy to attain this stage of contemplation also. So now in verse number 7, Krishna is going to give us the various stages that we have to go through. To attain this state of moksha, there are various stages that we have to go through. Basically, he is summarizing again, as I said, chapters 2, 3, 4 are all, he has said this before, so it is repetitive and he keeps on summarizing it. Okay. So, how does he summarize this path of reaching moksha? The first thing Krishna says is, yoga yukta. That is the very first thing we must be very firm on. Yoga yukta means, be a karma yogi. All your actions must be in the form of karma yoga. Whatever actions you do. And as I said, what is karma yoga? Right action with right attitude. Dedicating all your actions to God. And how do you accept the results? Ishvara prasadam. It is all coming from God. Because I have surrendered all my action to God, I receive everything as Ishvara prasadam. So first Krishna says, yoga yuktaha. Be firm on the path of karma yoga. Discharge all your responsibilities and duties as a karma yogi. And what happens, he says, the very next word there, vishudatma. See, the word atma again is there. Here atma does not mean the soul, the consciousness. Here atma means the mind. And what happens to the mind? Vishudatma. It becomes pure. When you become a karma yogi, first thing is you attain purity of mind, as we have discussed. Okay? Then what happens? He says, from that you progress to the second stage. What is the second stage? Again, viji tat atma again. Viji atma. Again the word atma appears. So earlier was vishudatma, which atma meant what? Mind. Now viji atma. What does atma now mean here? So, viji atma means conquer the self. How are you going to conquer the self? No, it's not conquer the senses. It's viji atma. How you conquer yourself? Understand yourself. How? See, again, atma has got many, many, many meanings. Atma can mean the soul. Atma can mean the mind. As in that word, vishudatma. Here, atma means body. The word atma here, viji atma means conquer yourself, does not mean your soul, but means conquer your body. So, what does it mean by conquer your body? What does... So, first of all, you must have a discipline over your body, right? As it is, we don't have a discipline over our own body, the needs of the body. So, Krishna says very important that viji atma means have a discipline over the body also, right? You should be the master of your body, not the body telling you what to do. So, you should be the master of your body. Then, another very important quality at second stage is jitendriya. Indriya is senses. Jit means be a master of your senses also. So conquer your body and conquer your senses. Because most of the time, majority of us are leading a life driven by our senses. We are dictated by our senses. What our senses desire, we just follow. Right? Ultimately, we come to our own destruction. So, senses should be under your control. What you want to see, what you want to hear, what you want to taste, what you want to smell, everything should be in your control, in your grip. That is the second stage. Having purified the mind, be a master of your body, be a master of your senses also. And then only you come to the third stage. Again the word Atma comes. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma. Two times again. Now what does Atma mean here again? The soul. So there are two Atma. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma again. Again Atma, Atma. Two Atma. So, what he said here, the first stage is what? Be a karma yogi, yoga yukta, purify your mind. Second stage is discipline your body, vijitatma, discipline your senses, jitatma. When you are able to do that, then he says you rise to a third stage, which is when you see that one single consciousness everywhere and that same consciousness in you. So here Atma means the soul. So you see Atma can mean many, many things. So the third level is when you reach that higher stage, when you only see the presence of one single soul pervading everywhere. Right now we look at life, we look at people, we divide people by shape, size, color, etc. or religion or race, etc. But here Krishna says then you go over that, you only see that one consciousness. Everywhere, that you see everywhere and you see that same consciousness within yourself. So that is the third stage. And what happens when you reach that third stage, Krishna says, Kurvan Apina Lipyati. By performing actions, again very important here, not by giving up actions, you carry on doing all your duties and responsibilities. It does not mean once you have reached that higher stage, you give up all your duties. Kurvan means carry on performing all your actions, responsibilities and duties, but na lipyate, you are not at all attached or you are not at all affected by what happens. So you are free. You are free from all the, what we call, the results of your actions. So there is no cumulative karma. You don't accumulate any punyam, you don't accumulate any papam. You are freed of punyam and papam. So up to this stage now, Krishna summarizes the state of a karma yogi who has become a jnani. From a karma yogi, you become a jnani. And next week when we come back, we discuss these two very popular verses in the Gita, verse number 8 and 9, which talk about the state of a karma yogi who has reached the highest state. So these two verses, 8 and 9, this Ramakrishna Paramahansa frequently refers to these verses as the most two important verses in the Gita. So we'll come back next week and discuss on this. Any questions? No? Yes.
You were saying earlier that when you go from the stage of householder, then you go, so that way you learn to, you go through and then you come to that stage.
Deal with the different situations in life, yes. Yeah.
Whereas the, see the brahmacharya,
right.
He goes directly to a sannyasi.
Right.
So is it because of his past very good karma that has brought him to that stage,
exactly.
Which looks like a shortcut?
Exactly. Those who progress from brahmacharya, who have no desire to go through family life, but jump straight to sannyas, it is because of the past lives that they've already gone through. They've attained that state of purification where that attraction of going through this family life is no more there. There's only one attraction in their mind and that is sannyas. So people like Adi Shankaracharya from age of 6, he only wanted to go and find a guru and attain sannyas. These people have already gone through that karma yoga purification stage. So that's why we have to assess ourselves. What is attracting us? And where are we more comfortable? We can remain in the household if we find it comfortable and also attain moksha. We have to assess this for ourselves. Okay? Right. So we end with a prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru. Thank you.